Hey, listeners, welcome to another episode of the Kids Ministry 101 podcast. I'm your host, Chuck Peters, and today I'm excited to introduce you to another podcast in our Lifeway podcast family. This week, I'd like to feature a conversation that Jana Magruder and I had with Brian Daniel on the Group Answers podcast. Check out this special episode of Group Answers on the Kids Ministry 101 podcast platform. And if you like what you hear, look for more episodes with Brian and the Group Answers podcast wherever you find podcasts. Thanks for listening today. We'll see you back here again soon for another episode of the Kids Ministry 101 podcast. But today, enjoy this special feature of the Group Answers podcast with Brian Daniel.
Welcome back to the Group Answers podcast show. I am Brian Daniel, and I am really excited today. I always say I'm excited, but I mean really, truly, not made up excited today to be with Chuck Peters and Jana Magruder, both leaders in Lifeway's Next Gen Publishing Ministry. Welcome to the show, Chuck, Jana.
Thanks for having us, Brian. It's good to be here.
Glad to be back.
Yeah. So typically, our producer and engineer, Donnie Gordon, I keep saying we need an applause button, but I still don't think we have that. But if we had it.
It's a smattering. It's like a golf clap.
That's right. If we had that, we would be pushing that button right now. So, all right. I know both of you have a lot to say. You're coming off a season of research. And research that went in, which we'll get into later, the new Hi-Fi curriculum for student and kids. So we'll get into those details later. But I wanted to just start there because I'm not saying that this is right. In fact, this is something that needs to be corrected. But we don't talk about next gen discipleship on the show a whole lot, or haven't. Jana, you've been on the show. You're moving towards the gold jacket, I think. Two appearances away. So first, Chuck, Jana, tell us about Gen Z and Alpha. And so who are they? And what are you learning about the distinctives of these two groups? Because generational conversations, honestly, are relatively new in our culture, I think. I mean, because before, say, 1990 or 80, I don't know if we had this conversation.
Yeah.
So these two groups are coming, they're next gen, coming of age. Tell us what you're learning about Alpha and Gen Z.
Well, so let's back up just one step from that to tell you about the book that we've put together. So the things that we're going to share today is based on research that we did with our team in concert with the team from Lifeway Research, as we were tasked with the job of creating a curriculum resource through Lifeway, Lifeway Kids and students together, to speak specifically to the needs of Gen Z and Gen Alpha. And so before we set out to create a resource, we had to do some research, right? And so resources have to be anchored in research to be strong. And so we did our homework. And so we did a bunch of research and looking at research that we had already compiled with our friend Scott McConnell, who leads Lifeway Research, assessed that, had a lot of conversations with churches. Of course, we live and work in this space with preschool children and student ministry leaders in churches, so we have that direct point of contact.
We also literally live with Gen Z.
Yeah, we do.
We're raising Gen Z kids in our homes.
Jana and her family and I and mine, we have kids who are in these spaces, as do you, Brian. Mm-hmm. And so we live it every day. And so all of that, the research and the back work that we did to prepare to create a resource led to such an amount of data and information that fed not just a resource, but a strategy for how we as the church need to engage and reach this generation, that fed to what is now a book. And so that book is called Flip the Script, that Jana and I co-authored with another of our colleagues. And it is where we unpack all the things we're going to talk about today. We do have a free download available. Maybe we can put that in the show notes. It's lifeway.com/flip-the-script-downloads, where anyone who's listening that wants to get a free PDF of that book can get it there. But as we talk about this based on that.
I have a question for you guys. All right, let's talk about that for a minute. A lot of our listeners probably not going to be aware of what goes into what you're talking about with a research project. Yeah. How long did it take? What does that entail? Because it is real important, I think, for people to know that most, if not all, of what we do is grounded in research. So what does that mean? You guys just coming off this season, how does that work? What's the process?
Man, it's been, 3 years, Jana? Mm-hmm.
3 years.
Talk about how we got started. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we have great partners in Lifeway Research, and we have done a couple of other studies with them that we've actually been able to commission the thesis, if you will, like go find out this question. But for this particular research, we were able to compile lots of different pieces to kind of ground the strategy that we conducted for this. I will say for listeners, because you can't see until you go to the download, that because we're kids ministry background, this is a picture book in a lot of ways. It's colorful. It's all the research is depicted in infographics, which
I would call that rather than a picture book. I would say it's data visualization. It's data viz for you guys who are in the biz.
But the point is, when you hear, oh, a research book, you think of chapter
that's
books,
true.
Black and
yeah.
white words, and that's it. No, this is a visual graphic organization tool that tells a lot of information in a small picture, and it's just page after page of those pictures. So I want to tell listeners that because the last thing you really want to hear about is another research book, because I know we all read a lot of those. And I love generational research. Can I just say and acknowledge that we're all Gen X? Yes, Ryan?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's why I like generational research, is because Gen X doesn't really have much research about us. They skip us.
Yeah, we're underserved.
Yeah, we're underserved. Yeah. And so
we could take this show in such a different direction.
I know.
I mean, it's just right there, ready to go.
It goes boomers, Gen X,
yeah,
millennials, Gen Z, and now Alpha. But for the sake of this book, a lot of the research and the actual data that we had to use is Gen Z. And that is because Generation Alpha is not yet 18. And so because of that, official research can't be done on them because you can't ask them questions. Now we can observe, and we can certainly look at Gen Z that is informing a lot of the data that's coming out about Gen A. But just so you know, that's where a lot of our research started from, is Gen Z.
And one of the key things that we should acknowledge, being Xers, is that we, as church leaders, no matter what generation we are of ourselves, as our native generation, we cannot assume that other generations think the same as we do. And so there has been a general assumption that we do ministry the way we've always done it. And as you said, Brian, that wasn't really a conversation a few years ago. I think of it in terms of music. So being a person who loves music, I know Jan is a music gal. So the music changed with every decade for a long time. Like the music of the 1920s was really different than the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, 80s, 90s, and today, right? You get that radio kind of thing. But music changed a lot. And then all of a sudden it kind of didn't. Music just kind of all became music. And it's really hard to tell a song that is current from one that is 10 years old or 20 years old. And so in the same way, we're in a season right now where the way the different generations respond socially, culturally, with their felt needs, with their social patterns and behaviors, with the way we engage them with the gospel is really, really different. And so if we're talking to someone who is 60 years old versus someone who is 50 or 40 or 30 or 20 or 10, we really need to be wise and aware to change the conversation, to be culturally aware and generationally aware of how we engage with them. And that's really the big finding, is that we have to flip our script away from the way that we have always done ministry based on assumptions that we've had, to meet the unique needs, to disrupt what we've done in some ways, to meet this generation where it's at.
So I think this might be the place to where, not, I agree. And the other thing about music is, you're right, my youngest daughter is Z, my oldest is millennial. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them live with us anymore, though. But we do still live with them. I think you're probably the same. About the music is, we used to claim music, like I'm a child of the 80s. Well, Gen Zs, they claim it all because they have access to it all. We were limited to cassettes
on the radio.
Yeah. And these days they can go get whatever they want. So my daughter Skylar may claim one of her favorite songs is something from the 60s or 70s. There's no music of like what you said. And so that is a distinctive, is the way that this Z's think, I would assume. And that does inform the way that we go about discipleship. And in terms of next gen, I was just in an event back before Christmas, and I was leading this track of state leaders. You guys are, and maybe most of you out there listening are familiar with SBC polity and how we're organized. There's a lot of state leaders there. And one of the things that came up was this, I don't know if I would call it crisis, but concern about next gen and how we serve them. That, because I think there is a consensus that it's not being done very effectively or very well right now out there. So let me just kick it back to you guys to respond to that and talk about what are the distinctives of these generations, well, Z, I think is who we're talking about, and how does that inform discipleship, and how is that being rolled into something like our newest release, which is HiFi, which is rooted in this research and the findings and conclusions that we've come to?
Well, one of the big things the research showed us immediately was that the trend is not good. And I think we know this anecdotally in the church. With each subsequent generation, the research shows that fewer and fewer identify as Christian or are involved in their church. And so there's the reality is that there are fewer Gen Z and millennial attendees in our churches. And in fact, the millennial generation was the first one where less than 50% of that generation identifies as Christian. And so that, there's a major change where the Christian worldview, people who had a background with church or at least had an understanding of who God is and what the Bible is, and an idea that that Christianity is a positive thing, that has now flipped to where that is the minority viewpoint. So less than 50% of that millennial generation, and it continues down with Gen Z and will continue going down based on the cultural trends that we see. So there's a reality there that we, so that kind of raises the question, how can we continue to do the same thing we've always done and expect a different outcome? And right, because it's not working, something's not working. So therefore, we do have to make some kind of a change in how we engage.
Some of the other hallmarks of this generation is the loneliness crisis, which was on the rise even before the pandemic. And then we just doubled down and all stayed more isolated during the pandemic. And so that just continues to increase. And then the anxiety crisis as well. We know that in every generation, anxiety is raising, but the most in Gen Z. And so we see that also in Generation Alpha. This term expressive individualism, we've talked about a lot and we referenced a lot for this generation, which has led us to building around identity. So expressive individualism, talk to us a little bit about that, Chuck.
Yeah, so basically it's a worldview, right? We have a Christian worldview or now an increasingly secular worldview. And in the secular worldview that is dominant with our kids, and it's we say it's pervasive and it's persuasive. Our kids cannot get around the influence of the secular worldview that is pressed on them every day. It's in our Disney movies when they're little kids and in the music they listen to that we've already talked about. The message is your life is about you. It's about your choice, your heart, what's right for you, right? The idea of is there truth or is truth relative? Well, it's very relative to this generation. And so the idea that we would come to them and say there's one way and it's the Bible and it's Jesus is offensive to the generation. And they get hung up on some of the language. Now, truth is truth, right? And so the gospel is the gospel. The word of God is consistent and faithful and infallible. And we always have to come back to that. But the way that we communicate those concepts, the ear of this generation is tuned to tune us out. The generation is averse to affiliation, denomination, institutions, companies. They're suspicious of anyone who belongs to an organization.
Which includes the church.
Which includes the church.
Yeah.
And so they do not come ready to listen. Many of them do not have any sort of a Christian or biblical background in their lives. Because their millennial parents didn't attend church, they don't either. And in fact, some of them, their grandparents had dropped out of the church. And so there's this downward slope we talk about in terms of that engagement or relationship with the church to where we have really an unchurched generation in a lot of communities. And so expressive individualism is the way of defining what are the values of this generation, which really says my biggest calling, the purpose of life is for me to discover and define my own identity. And whether you, Brian, identify in a different way than I do, that's your right. I have no right to tell you how to define yourself, and you have no right to tell me how to define myself. And so this idea that it's all about you discovering your own individual identity, that drives the generation. And it's not just the freedom to do that. There's a responsibility that they feel to do that. You must define yourself. And so there's pressure for me to determine who I am going to be. Well, and we know the message that they need to hear is that identity is not something that you discover or that you choose. It's something that God has already determined. And so we need to be able to speak to this generation in terms of the two big needs that they have. Jenna mentioned the loneliness and isolation factor. So this is the most connected generation of all time through media and in their phones and the internet. Yet it's also the loneliest and most isolated in history in terms of real life relationships. And so they are lacking in relationships. And that's the key to how we reach them. We need to engage them, not with a program, not with a rule book, not with a formula. We have to engage them one-on-one in interpersonal relationship.
Yeah. So it sounds like, if I can just rephrase that, the script historically has kind of been I would put it this way, even though I don't know that it's the best term, a one size fits all. It's this blanket message.
A formula. Yeah.
Yeah. It's maybe formulaic, but it's not so customized. I read a book last year, and the title was Atonement for a Sinless Society. And this author, it's more than this, but one of the takeaways for me was, when you think generations and who we're talking about now, there's a gap in their personal makeup between how they see themselves versus an idealized version of themselves. And a lot of their energy goes to reconciling those two gaps. So that's what you see in social media. That's what you see in the joy economy with travel and leisure, and how we want to be seen, how we want to be seen through our social media feeds. It's this idealized version of ourselves. But then when that proves not to be true, or we still wrestle, or I get the vacation, I get the pictures, I get the relationships, I don't have fulfillment, well, then you get this almost carnage. And so when you talk about flipping the script, you've got this historical script versus what you're proposing now that the research has shown. So where do we go? Well, what is the reconciliation?
We've identified, and maybe it would be good to talk about, the 6-step spiritual journey pathway, Jana, that you helped develop, where we start with different assumptions.
Right. So a traditional view of ministry that has worked for a really long time, it's the way I grew up, it's probably the way you grew up, is this thought that kids can come to us and hear the gospel, H-E-A-R, and then immediately make a decision to believe in Jesus as their Savior.
And we move them rather quickly.
And we move them quickly.
Right, to a call.
Right. And we assume that there's already a lot of background knowledge. And then immediately go from believing to sharing with their friends. So hear, believe, share. Boom, boom, boom. That's kind of the traditional script that we're talking about. What we're suggesting is flipping the script to not hear, H-E-A-R, but hear, H-E-R-E. So that's a homonym of just...
Which doesn't work in an audio.
I know. I'm trying to spell.
And people are like, you love it. Here to hear.
Show notes, show notes. So yes, because this, we designed a spiritual pathway that walks through the different steps that a child could be in. And so we assume nothing. That's kind of what was our starting point for designing this book, and then the curriculum that we designed to support it, was what does it look like to have a resource where you assume nothing? You don't assume that a student or a child has any kind of familiarity with being in church or who God is or what the Bible is.
Who the people in the Bible are.
Yeah, who the people are. I mean, there's a lot of most churches that assume that kids are going to come to us knowing some of that. And we build off of that. So what does it look like to just assume nothing other than you are here with us and we want to celebrate that? And so this hallmark of belonging is what we built in for this generation as well, because of what we've learned about isolation and this identity crisis. Who do I belong to? And so the church has such an amazing opportunity to create that culture of belonging for kids, for teenagers who come to us and let their guard down so that they can begin listening and hearing the gospel and understanding increasingly more and more about who God is. And then through the power of the Holy Spirit in his timing leads to believing and then growing and then reaching and sharing. And so it's taking two steps back from the traditional script, if you will, to just assuming nothing other than that child, that student is here with you. And how do we create that sense of belonging?
Just curious, are there benchmarks to belonging? Like, are there attributes that are, I'm not maybe suggesting measurable, but as you guys as you've developed this, I mean, how are we understanding belonging? If I'm a leader out there, I want to understand a little bit more about the context of belonging, because I'm sure it's more than just presence, even though that's a big part of it, just being present.
A lot of churches are welcoming, right? And there's a difference between being welcoming, where we are friendly. We have, at our church, we have people with umbrellas. If it's raining, they'll go out and they'll walk you in. That's very welcoming. It's friendly.
Mm-hmm. Hospitable.
Hospitable. Mm-hmm. And we can easily mistake hospitality for creating a culture of belonging.
Oh, that's so good.
Right? There's a difference between making people feel welcome and people feeling known. That word known is a key word because it's personal, right? You may feel known in a different way than Jana does or than Donnie does as he engineers over there, right? And so it's very individualized. And so as we engage with this generation, and here's the big reveal for all the listeners, the things that we've learned about Gen Z and Gen Alpha are true of all the generations.
Yeah.
Because the problem isn't necessarily only generational, it's cultural. And this, the things that are the hallmarks of this generation permeate the whole culture. And so everyone needs to feel seen and known and welcome and wanted. Everyone needs to be engaged in relationship. And we take that all the way back to how Jesus did ministry. It goes back to the first century rabbi. Discipleship happens in relationship. Right, Jesus didn't say, "Come and study my teachings," although we do and they did as a rabbi. But it was walking together and talking together. Discipleship cannot happen without relationship. So I like to say, in the kid space, for instance, you can't have a strange adult who doesn't know the kid show up and read a piece of paper that's got a Bible lesson on it and call that discipleship. If there's no relationship, it's really not discipleship. And so in that, kids and students and even us as adults need to be connected to leaders in a way that they miss us when we're gone and they celebrate us when we come back. And as we are working with a generation that is increasingly less frequent or more infrequent with their attendance patterns, as they become more and more infrequent, we need to be more regular. They need to see the same faces in the same places, the same greeters, the same leaders, the same faces who will say, "Brian, you're back." And they remember my name, right? And they welcome you in. They ask you how whatever it was went in your life because they're interested in you. And that's very different than, "Oh, if you're a first-time visitor, here's a mug," right? There's a real interest in me. And when people, it comes down to an economy that's based on trust and respect. When I know that you care about me, that's that old phrase, right? Nobody cares what you know until they know that you care. It's trite, but it's true. And so people need to know that we truly care about them, not our programs, not our platforms, not our presentations, that we care about them personally.
All right, practical question for you. First off, the difference between being known and friendly is profound. And I hope everyone is listening to that out there, because I've noticed certain contexts, it's like, what's going on here? Someone's saying, "Hey, I'm glad you're here." I'm like, "Well, do we even know each other? I mean, are you saying that to everybody?" There's a difference between friendly and being known. That's really good. Second, and this is more of a practical, more technical question associated with the curriculum itself. As I've been in this world of publishing for more than 20 years now, I've realized that there are limitations to the printed message. There is no substitute, Chuck, for what you're describing, which is that relational element. The challenge is, how have you guys baked that into a curriculum like HiFi? What are you doing that bridges that gap between instructions in a book and something that's more of an ethos, that's more environmental, that's more, dare I say, heart level? What are you doing in HiFi that you would point to say, this is where we are different?
One of the models that we created for this is called the Outsider In methodology. And it looks like a bullseye where you start off with a child coming in by creating psychological safety and comfort. How do we do that? Through activities that are rooted in relationship building. So instead of a Bible character game, when a child comes, you know, at the beginning of a session, you do a, what were your highs and lows this week? We make it very easy for a leader to be able to get to know their class, their group. And then from there, that those kids feel safe. They feel they've let their guard down. And then we play games. So we're big proponents of fun in children's ministry. We don't make any apologies for that because we know that when kids have fun, they make a friend. They feel included. They want to come back. And it's through that kind of inclusion and participation that leads to learning and even contributing at the center of it. So in this new curriculum, which I don't think we've said what it is yet, it's called HYFI, H-Y-F-I, that has come out of Flip the Script. That, like you said, is baked into the opening activities, the large group activities, the small group activities, where we're giving leaders the games, the discussion starters. There's a lot of media in it where you're building that belonging. And then our teaching plans center around building identity. And so those two pieces, where those come together, belonging and identity, we call that the click, where those two things click together is the heart of what Flip the Script is suggesting, and then what our curriculum that has come out of that is implementing.
We're talking about three age groups here, right?
Yes. Next gen. So preschool kids and students. And in HYFI, each one of those is a unique experience. So it's not preschool is not a derivation of kids that we just simplified.
So it's not
a whole
ancillary
build from the ground up
right. That
is uniquely preschool, uniquely kids and uniquely students in approach. With this outsider in methodology that Jana was explaining, every single week, you have to assume that every person feels like an outsider. So, because the assumption that we often have is, oh, that person's here every week, they're an insider, I don't need to engage with them. That is absolutely not the case. There are many, many times when I have, even in my own church, felt a little bit like an outsider, right? And so everyone needs to be engaged every week as though they are disconnected and not ready to engage, and at every age level. And so we need to take specific action to break down barriers to belonging, to that feeling of safety, emotional safety, because people come in with a barrier up, right? Our barriers of our assumptions or of our stresses and strains of the week, our struggles, where we come in not really ready to listen. Like Jana said, if we don't come in ready to H-E-A-R, but maybe we're present, always assume as they're present. And so we need to take specific measures as the church, as a group leader. We need to take measures every single session to make people feel emotionally safe so they feel a sense of belonging and acceptance before those barriers come down. And so we need to bring those down with relational safety. And then eyes, ears, hearts, and minds are open to be able to hear and receive the message. In terms of the whole church, the word FLIP in our book, Flip the Script, is an acronym for four key relationships that we've identified that every person needs to have. And so the first F is for friends. Everyone needs to find a friend. Why? Because when I have a friend, I want to attend. Right? If you show up at church and you don't connect with someone in a real relationship, it can be friendly, but there's a difference between being friendly and having a friend. We have to build that in. So we need to give opportunity. And that's how we use activities in the kids and student resources of HYFI, is we need to give opportunity to facilitate friendships, not just assume that they happen. And so if your ministry, and this is true in groups as well, Brian, if your ministry is a sit still, be quiet, face forward approach, you are not facilitating friendships. We have to find ways to connect people, find things in common so that they know that these people are safe.
And I will interrupt you to say that that's part of our research that we found as well. Kids who grow up with friends in the church have a higher likelihood of staying in the church Yes. All the way up into adulthood and in the faith in general. So it's scientific that friendships really matter. So that was important to us as we built around how can we foster friendships in the church. I think the church has a huge opportunity to do that for this generation.
And how many times have you sat through a Bible study group, a men's group or a ladies group, where you sit through and at the end of it, you leave and you may have studied something, but you don't really have a friend. Yeah. Right? There's a miss there. Mm-hmm. And so more and more, having that friend connection is what cements people in the faith. Mm-hmm. That's where they become willing to listen to others because I know you and I know you care about me. So that friend is important. So the F in flip is for friend. L is for leader. Everyone needs one leader. And I say one adult leader in the kids and student space who knows their name, their need, their story, and their situation. That's the leader who misses me when I'm gone and who celebrates me when I come back. If the enemy of this sort of connection is when people serve in a ministry out of obligation on a rotation, where it's hit and miss of who's in the room and who's present. We need leaders who are committed, connected, and who care about the people that they lead. So as group leaders, you need to be committed, connected, consistent, care about those people.
Right. Question about that. I want to ask you in terms of leader development, what resources are built into the Hi-Fi curriculum just to help leaders and churches develop leaders like what you just described?
Yeah. So we have a whole training component that's behind the scenes of Hi-Fi where our editors and authors are speaking into the leader and saying, this week, here's how you engage. Here are questions to ask. Here are tips for making that connection and helping people connect with one another. So that's all behind the scenes. That's not part of written into the lesson,
of course,
but that's training that is provided as a part of the resource for those who use it.
All right. Friend, leader.
Influencer. I as an influencer. Every person in your church is an influencer. The person who greets at the door, the person who leads worship, the person who runs a game, the person who walks with another adult to take children to and from the restroom. Everyone that interacts is an influencer. And so we need to let people know that what they do is influential. And so when we have unchurched people or under-churched kids who come into our churches, they see the way we interact with one another. They may have never seen Christian people interact in relationship before. And so every interaction we have with them and with one another is on display, and it's an opportunity for us to show what it means to walk in the faith. And kids see that. Students see that. They don't just listen to what we say. They observe how we live. And so calling out everyone that we have as an influencer is another important relationship.
And research tells us on leaders and influencers that a child who grows up with a godly, intentional adult in their life from the church.
Who's not their parent.
Who's not their parent. Yeah. So leaders, we're talking to you. Again, has that staying power in the faith, in the church, all the way into adulthood. So we felt strongly that we needed to build that into Hi-Fi as well, is how do we make sure that kids and students have that influence in their life?
So friends, leaders, influencers, and the P is for pastors. Everyone needs to know, have a relationship with the pastor. And we speak in the kids and student space about that next gen space, that they need to know that the pastor is not just a persona on a platform, but is a real person. And so we encourage pastors to engage with the next generation in the lobby or to come into the kids space or to the student space on a Sunday morning or a Wednesday night, not to come in and teach or preach, but to come in and connect. They need to know what your favorite pizza topping is if you're the pastor. They need to know that you have a dog and what its name is. They need to know what you did during the snowstorm of 04. And when they can relate to that pastor as a person, again, the relationship, it's not the platform, it's not the microphone, it's not the position that makes them a respected authority. It's the personal relationship. And so it's essential that we include pastors in our ministry to the next generation.
Also, that's just, like you said, Chuck, this is just a real good approach to groups at large.
At large.
You know, if the friends, leaders, influencers, and pastors, groups need pastoral support. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot. Pastors need to be talking about the importance of community and groups and the role of discipleship and disciple making from the pulpit. So no surprises there. Real quick, if I wanted to download or get a copy of Flip the Script, because Jen is right, guys. I mean, you can read it, But it's also, I mean,
it's beautiful. It's visually
beautiful. We're overusing the word, but I love things that you can, at a glance or a flip through, get a handle on what it is. And so it's very visual and it's very research, and it's stuff that's had a broader application than just what we're talking about today. So if they wanted a copy of it, go to...
Yeah. So we wrote the book again as a next gen resource, but it really is for the whole church. It's a book, like the physical book is beautiful to hold and to behold and to use as a reference. It should be on every shelf of someone who's in ministry. So there's a free place to get the PDF version. That is at lifeway.com/flip-the-script-download. It's long, but it's worth it. And you can also find the book for sale on lifeway.com. And so if you want a physical copy of the book, it is not costly. And we've priced it to make it accessible to everyone. So you can look for Flip the Script at lifeway.com.
And if we wanted to find out more about Hi-Fi or what that is, or even a sample, how about that?
I got this one. So we have a website for Hi-Fi. It's myhyfi, myhyfi.com, myhyfi. So at myhyfi.com, you will find everything there is to know about the Hi-Fi resource for preschool kids and students. You can click on the tabs to see some video samples and previews, and there's a link that will take you through where you can sign up for a free trial to check out the whole resource. It's digital only. There's no paper, so it's a digital resource. It's flexible and customizable. So in addition to the content that it teaches about our identity in Christ and the culture it creates and how to engage with this generation relationship, there's a technology component that's really cool too. So all of that is there for you to check out at myhifi.com.
Just how you use it, of course, is up to you. But you can pick and choose from a resource like this really easily. But here's the deal. We are at a point in the history of evangelicalism of the church to where there has been a script that more or less has been effective. And it's being challenged right now. And I think we have to adapt. Now, that's not to say that is not the same, and this is not what you're saying, and in no way is this giving in to culture, but it's understanding culture and it's understanding uniqueness and distinctives of generations. And so this idea, the Hi-Fi curriculum, if anything, it is a piece of that conversation, if it's not the whole solution. So I would just encourage everyone, and I'm sure you can just Google Flip the Script PDF. You could probably get to it that way too. So thank you, Chuck and Jana. Appreciate you being with us today. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answers Show. Look forward to seeing everyone on down the road.